Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is South Dakota Republican Mike Rounds, who joins us to discuss foreign ownership of American farmland and a host of other issues. But first, here's this week's headlines. The Securities and Exchange Commission finalized a rule requiring the disclosure of certain emissions to investors, but not the Scope 3 category that had concerned farmers and ranchers. Instead, the rule forces corporations to disclose Scope 1 and Scope 2 emissions, which involve what the company produces itself and those associated with its energy consumption. The SEC received more than 24,000 comments on the proposal that did include Scope 3 emissions from farms and ranches. Also on the climate front, USDA plans to reduce the amount of information farmers need to provide for the Partnerships for Climate Smart Commodities program. Currently, producers must provide detailed information about their operations enrolled in projects because USDA says it needs it to evaluate the impact of climate smart practices. USDA Undersecretary Robert Bonney said the department scaled back its request after hearing feedback, and there will be instances where less data could suffice. And finally, lawmakers agreed on a minibus spending package to avoid a partial shutdown that would have included the Department of Agriculture and Food and Drug Administration. The deal fully funds the Women, Infants, and Children program, which was a priority for Democrats. The deal also includes provisions to address concerns over foreign ownership of American farmland. USDA will receive $1 million to stand up a new data reporting system to track overseas investment in American acreage. The department will also gain a voice on the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States and be charged with sounding the alarm on any purchases that could pose a threat to national security. Senator Mike Rounds has kept a close eye on the issue and says he's glad to see the provisions, but knows more will need to be done.
We will still do our best to try to get some additional provisions within federal law. But first of all, the idea of putting the Secretary of Ag on CFIUS, we'd originally suggested that they be on as a non-voting member, but after discussing it with the Department of Ag, it would appear that it's more appropriate to have him included permanently as a voting member on CFIUS. So that's the path that we will pursue to try to make that a permanent part of CFIUS in the future.
Mm-hmm. Looking at the foreign farmland issue, several states, including South Dakota, have taken on the issue through legislation at the state level. So given the state-by-state pushes out there, why continue the federal push?
Well, we don't have any problem at all with states trying to get ahead of this. In fact, they are the laboratories of democracy, and we can learn a lot from what states do. But overall, what we want to make sure is that our sensitive sites or our air bases are being protected from larger facilities being put near them by foreign adversaries. We've done the best that we can to find common ground with the House concerning what that would look like. If you're a resident of the United States today, you're a legal resident of the United States today, and you're of descent coming from one of those countries, we're not concerned about that. We are concerned if you're in this land and you're trying to lease land close by and put up facilities where sensitive listening devices and so forth could be housed more easily. Those are the types of things that we are concerned with.
Mm-hmm. So given some of the language that's in that appropriations bill that's under consideration here this week, wondering, does Congress still need to work to ban China specifically from foreign ownership of American farmland?
We don't have a lot of evidence right now based on our most recent reports that they're buying lots of farmland in the United States. But what we do know is that with regard to their interest in looking at our for national security purposes at areas around some of our bases, we're doing our best to identify those and stop those. CFIUS is concerned about that. The FBI continues to look for those particular possibilities. But as of this last week, the last time that I had a classified briefing with the FBI, we did not see evidence of those transactions occurring today. But let's not get to the point of being complacent.
We'll have more from South Dakota Republican Mike Rounds right after this.
farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of our space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Welcome back. South Dakota Republican Mike Round says he understands the importance of China as a trade partner, especially for American agriculture. But he says he doesn't want that trade relationship to come at the expense of America's national or food security.
We would love to have China as a friend. We would love to have them as a person that we could do business with. We like buying products from China. China likes buying products from us. The challenge is that if we are providing them with strategic or very important items that they use in creating offensive capabilities that could threaten our homeland, we've just got to be careful about that. We know right now that we're in an adversarial position with them with regard to the Western Pacific, the Indo-PACOM region. And a lot of our allies in that region are concerned about China's very aggressive approach to the South China Sea area, where literally 50% of all of the trade in the world goes through. If they believe that that's an area where they could have a strategic impact on allowing goods and services to move from Europe in and around the Middle East and back into the United States, then that's a strategic opportunity for them that they could hold over us. We don't want that to happen. We believe in freedom of navigation, and that's what's driving a lot of the concerns that we find between us and China today.
Mm-hmm. There's been several states that have actually pursued overseas investment in American agriculture. I mean, including during your time as governor of South Dakota, a lot of folks came over from Europe, for instance, to stand up dairies in the eastern part of the state. How do you protect that level of investment while still protecting the national security interests that you've mentioned here in this conversation?
You begin with looking at the specific countries that appear to be a threat to us long term. Second of all, if you have individuals that want to come to the United States and they do it legally, if they immigrate into the United States, a lot of them bring capital with them, but they also bring a desire to create businesses, successful businesses here that feed our other businesses. So if we can build our economy with individuals coming in and using their expertise to add value in our state, they should be welcome. At the same time, for those countries that may, you know, be of concern to us, there's four in particular: Russia, China, Iran, and North Korea. For those particular countries, we want to make darn sure that if they've got citizens coming over here, they are not a threat and they are not working for those governments.
Mm-hmm. A couple other subjects before we let you go. You and Senator Tester from Montana have introduced a Congressional Review Act resolution that would basically send the Department of Agriculture back to the drawing board on its effort to allow Paraguayan beef imports. Wondering, that resolution has now seen the light of day for a little bit. As you talk with your colleagues, what level of support do you think you might be able to get for potential floor action, potential consideration, what have you?
The idea here is to bring attention to this particular rule that would allow Paraguay beef to come into the United States. We're concerned about foot and mouth disease. We haven't had a case of it here in the United States in years. In fact, we don't even vaccinate for that right now. Paraguay still does. We're concerned that it hasn't been since 2018 that we've had a group in Paraguay actually looking at whether or not it's safe or not. And if we ever had foot and mouth disease being brought in, it's going to scare consumers. And what will happen once the news media talks about it getting in here, it will decrease the ability for us to market our beef to consumers because they're going to be concerned about the safety of all beef, particularly when we can't do country of origin labeling in the United States today.
Before I let you go, I do want to ask you about the state of the GOP leadership in the Senate. Of course, Senator McConnell has said he plans to step down from his leader post, and several candidates have emerged to fill that gap. But I wonder, how do you think that, kind of lame duck session that we see Senator McConnell in right now will impact, if at all, things like the farm bill?
We've got a good leadership team here. That's one thing that you will find. Mitch McConnell is still the leader here. He's still calling the shots in terms of our strategies and as the minority leader. John Thune is the whip. That's the number two guy in the United States Senate. When Mitch was out for a while with an illness, John stepped in, did a great job for us. He's ready to go. I have no doubt that he is absolutely ready to roll. As soon as the next year comes around, we hope that he is the majority leader, not the minority leader. But Mitch has set this up so that the leadership team coming behind him is very, very capable. John Cornyn out of Texas, who was also announced, is a really good guy as well, very, very capable. So it's not a matter of having bad choices. It's a matter of having two very good choices. We don't lose either way, but I'm from South Dakota. I've known John Thune for a long time. He understands the idea of jackrabbits and what that means. And look, he'd be the right guy for the job right now.
Very good. Senator Rounds, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll be right back to hear from this week's panel, but first, our Hannah Pagel has a report on the biggest purchasers of American farmland in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
A growing share of America's farm, ranch, and forest land is now owned by foreign buyers. But despite widespread concern, China's ownership percentage is actually quite small. This graph shows foreign holdings of U.S. agricultural land, including the five largest totals from around the world. China is also listed on this graphic, despite holding less than 1% of the total foreign-owned acreage. 18 other countries actually hold more land than China's nearly 347,000 acres. According to USDA's most recent data on foreign land purchases, overseas investors owned or leased about 44.3 million acres of land in 2022. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Farmers have always taken care of what they value. They cultivated bountiful land and fed a nation hungry for progress. As Americans dialed up, precision on the farm led to yields once thought impossible. But when it came to nitrogen, it wasn't precise or predictable enough. Farmers deserve a nitrogen worthy of who they are and what their land can provide. And now there is one.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at agripulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we are going to continue our discussion on foreign farmland ownership with a panel following the subject. Joined for that conversation by Randy Dicku with Ag Economic Insights, as well as Micah Brown with the National Ag Law Center. And Micah, I want to go to you first, because we look at this issue. It's something that's been popping up really in a lot of conversations at the state and federal level. So kind of to frame up our conversation, I wonder if you could just walk us through, how has the landscape on foreign farmland ownership laws changed in the last, half decade to decade?
This issue of restricting foreign ownership, this is not new. This actually goes back to the signing of a Declaration of Independence as a reason cited for breaking away from the crown. And it's popped up at different political flashpoints through our nation's history, and more recently, this issue has popped up in this political flashpoint that started in 2021 and then continues to go in. We're still in this political flashpoint. A lot of the pre-2023 laws that were enacted, there were about 14 states that had foreign ownership laws, and they were very broad, very generalized restrictions that kind of threw a blanket restriction on foreign entities, non-resident individuals. So those same restrictions would apply to Chinese investments as Canadian investments. Whereas 2023, The states that were enacting these foreign ownership laws really were targeting foreign investments to specific countries, namely what I call the Big Four, which is China, Iran, North Korea, and Russia.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you mentioned the state-by-state focus that's been going on, and we've obviously seen that in recent years. But there's also been some discussion on Capitol Hill, folks maybe looking to have Congress take a crack at this. We saw appropriations language this week to that effect. I wonder, do you think a federal approach would be sufficient to supersede some of these state laws, or do you think there would still be states that, you know, could or would want to go further to, you know, perhaps refine things to their more parochial needs?
Yeah, we have seen lots of federal proposals getting active in this area with the 117th and 118th Congress, the current Congress, with restricting foreign investments. Preemption wise, it would depend, you know, the facts of any kind of situation and the law have to align, and there would have to be direct conflict between the federal regulation and state regulation. And a lot of these federal proposals are very similar to the state laws being enacted 2023 and present, where they, you know, look at the Big Four to restrict the Big Four in ag land purchases. So it seems like there's some overlap parallel between the regulations.
Mm-hmm. Randy, bringing you into the fold here, I want to look at just kind of the broader market and what necessarily has been happening with American agricultural land in general right now. As you look at that, what influence, if any, do you see on land values, land transactions, what have you? What influence do you think overseas investors are having in the broader market at this point?
I think that definitely varies by state, and different states have different laws and regulations about corporate land ownership, how that affects between, you know, farmers and investor buyers as individuals, or the corporate or investment fund that we see that's restricted in some states but allowed in other states. So you've got a little different mix of buyers in the markets depending on the state and locale and, of course, the type of land. But the overseas buyer, probably, you know, they've always been around in different aspects or in different entities. But, you know, it's become more prevalent. You know, some of those buyers probably were actually individuals who have inherited the land through their family and maybe have added more. But also, you know, a foreign buyer can invest in some of these larger investment funds if they have the capital resources to do that, or some foreign pension funds that invest in farmland through the different investment fund vehicles that there are available to them.
We'll have more from our panel right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together, but we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back. Randy Dickhout with Ag Economic Insights says there are a number of factors influencing the market for American farmland.
Well, you know, a market can go multiple ways. It's going to depend on that locale. Are the local producer, the farmer buyers, and the local investors pretty aggressive in buying up that land? And so any land that comes on the market, they're going to be very interested in it, and it, you know, brings back the opportunity to buy that. Whereas if you're in a region or an area that they're not very aggressive buyers for whatever reason, and more land on the market like that would, you know, works like a supply and demand, and the value would, you know, be depressed somewhat. But, you know, it's the percentage of foreign ownership is small, and you know, can be hidden somewhat, just like some corporate ownership can be hidden in through some entities. And, you know, it just depends if there's a volume that comes on the market.
Zooming out from specifically the foreign farmland ownership issue and looking more generally at the American ag land market as a whole, we saw this week the new ag economy barometer from Purdue and the CME group. You know, producers are issuing kind of flat expectations for farmland values in sort of the near future. As you look to the near and long term, what are your expectations for farmland values across the country?
Well, I think our near-term factors that influence, you know, like interest rates, commodity prices, outlook for farm profitability are tending more negative now than they probably were at the end of last year or the first of the year, especially as the mood with commodity prices going lower sure changes, you know, for the producer buyer and the investor buyer with the interest rate changes. So those short-term factors a little more negative, but I think the lower supply, as I mentioned, that's on the market tends to support, and the optimism longer term for potential for more biofuel, whether that be through corn usage or soybean usage, is positive longer term. The outlook for needing more protein around the world, all those things that support land values in the longer term remain positive, maybe not quite as positive. Mm-hmm.
Micah, I want to wrap up the conversation with you as we look to the appropriations bill on Capitol Hill this week, $1 million in there for the Department of Agriculture to stand up a data reporting system or improve its data reporting system under the law that tracks foreign purchases there. Wonder, as someone who's observing the issue, what do you think that $1 million could be best used for? Is this a technology need? Is it a staffing need? What do you think that, you know, that funding, how do you think that funding could best be used?
Back in a couple of years ago, the Consolidated Appropriations Act actually had a provision in there that requires USDA to establish a online reporting kind of mechanism and digitalize the reports under the Agricultural Foreign Investment Disclosure Act, or AFIDA. That money is likely going to go to establish that system to be in compliance with that Appropriations Act that went into law a couple of years ago. There have been discussions during Senate committee hearings where a USDA representative said that they request funding to establish this, to come in compliance with the law, to establish this online database.
Very good. Well, certainly a number of things to follow on this subject, a very complex issue with a lot of factors, that foreign farmland ownership issue. Randy and Micah, thanks for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers, but first, our Hannah Pagel has a report on how precision agriculture is being used across the country in this week's Map It Out.
Precision agriculture technologies help make farming more efficient and profitable. However, a report from the Government Accountability Office shows only 27% of farms are using the technology, even though it's been available since the 90s. This map shows the percentage of farms in each state using precision agriculture, like remote sensing, targeted sprayer systems, and more to produce crops and livestock between June 2022 and June 2023. More than half the operations in the Dakotas, Iowa, Illinois, and Nebraska use the precision practices. The report says precision ag technology isn't being used on a wider scale because of cost, farmer concerns about sharing data, and a lack of standards. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Don't miss the must-attend policy event of the year. Register now for the 2024 AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit. Hear from the diverse players who are trying to revitalize rural revenues as we examine the forward-looking ideas that will drive policy decisions for this year and the decades ahead. The summit takes place on March 18th at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. and through our virtual experience. View the agenda and register today under the Events tab at AgriPulse.com.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. The White House is scheduled to kick off the fiscal year 2025 budget process with the rollout of its budget on Monday. The next Consumer Price Index is released Tuesday. And finally, there's still time to sign up for our Ag and Food Policy Summit on March 18th. We're adding more speakers to the roster every day, including Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack and Senate Ag Committee Ranking Member John Bozeman. You can register on our website, where you can also find the latest in farm policy news on Capitol Hill and across the country. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.